The Inspector General report details, quote unquote, at least three and perhaps four games that were under consideration during a time range between March and August of 1960.
Like take the speech and then like cross out certain things and like put in like Mad Lib words.
Yeah.
My generations, my countrymen, what we need here is a fork. Wait.
they just paid a guy who was up on the stage to have like the fart box.
The U.S. is always interested in Cuban. Wait, microwaves?
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve along with the other Steve.
Yeah.
And Ryan.
Love me a tall boy from the gas station. Makes me feel bougie.
Is that where you meet them? Hi-oh.
Only the tallest boys get met at the gas station.
Look at that guy. He's way bigger than his own car.
It's like the Simpsons joke where the guy stands out of the car and he's like 8 feet tall and he's driving that little like Yugo.
Oh yeah, it's one of my favorite ever. This was the largest automobile I could afford.
You know, you just hook up with Manute Bull at the gas station. It's all good.
The other day I was at the gas station, this guy in a really nice Maserati pulled up and I just happened to peep when he got gas. He started filling it with regular. And I was just staring at him the whole time. I was like, you have to be kidding me.
Yeah, you're it was a regular
gas in a Maserati, bro.
It was a regular Maserati.
I don't know, man. It was real pretty.
You were just internally doing the snake while he's in prison. Where he's just screaming, she needs premium, dude. Premium.
All I could see, like, in my mind was, like, Van Gogh's, like, the scream. I was just,
Oh, my God.
I had a friend in China who bought a car, and he like knew nothing about a car. Like he didn't even know like that defrosters were a thing. Like he had like a rag. Like yeah, that'll just like clean off the windshield. I'm like, well, you know, you have a defroster that'll do that for you.
He's looking at you just with a blank stare.
I have a rag I use because the defroster works, but I wake up with like just enough time to go. So if the shit's like fogged over in the morning, I get it started.
Well, I have a squeegee that I use.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I have a garage.
But he told me one time that he put premium in his car, which was just like a I forget what it was.
It's gas. It's a type of gas.
It was it was a regular car, and it was just like I feel like it's going faster, whatever he was saying, and I was just like, yeah, you should just put regular gas in your car.
Yeah, you should save money, bro.
Like, you're probably going to blow up your engine putting high octane gas in it. Isn't what I was saying, but what I was implying.
Your 1994 Honda Accord.
No, so when it got to a certain age, you know, I just started putting the best fuels in it, you know? The gaskets are supposed to last the life of the car, so.
I mean, it's not a problem if you go up on octane. It's the problem is when you start to go down because you increase the chance of knocking and everything else. But like, I've put premium in my Tahoe before after the hurricanes had hit and there was no like regular available.
Knocking sounds like something Mormons do to like, you know, get away from actually having sex. You know, like soaking.
You know, that's always something you do with your special girl. It's not something you do with just any woman.
Soak right in there.
But for whatever reason, I couldn't remember it was a Buick. Because apparently, like, Buicks are considered, like, very good cars in China. And it was putting premium into a regular-ass Buick. And I was just like, yeah, you should just put regular into that. Because you're probably going to blow up the engine, if anything.
You're just wasting money, bro. Just put regular.
It's a good car. It's a Buick LeSabre.
But Buicks are, like, really popping in China. I was reading something about it. I was like,
what is this? Like a meme?
Still a thing. No, it's like,
are you guys trying to run like some bullshit by me?
Nope.
No,
because you both are aware of Buick popularity in China.
Because I read something about it recently.
That's the title of the fucking episode. Steve and Ryan, but not the other Steve, are very aware of Buick popularity in China. Steve. I expect Steve to say that. He reads like economic forecasts for China and shit, you know.
Steve and not the other Steve and Ryan are very big on Buick stock at the moment.
The yuan is gonna kill.
Well, I'm like one of those car nerds. So like I read it and I was like, what? And then I was like, kind of pieced it together.
Oh, you're one of the car nerds who wants to know about Buick popularity in China.
I've never seen like a Buick dealership here in the States. So I'm like, how the fuck are they still in business? Oh, China likes them. Okay. They're luxury over there.
It's very popular because Puyi, who we talked about before, his car was a Buick. And then after like the revolution happened and stuff happened, his car, I believe Zhou Enlai got his car, but because like China until like the mid to late 70s, like they didn't really have a domestic like car industry, and they were just sort of like using what they had, and that was like one of the nicest cars in the country. It's just, you know, a country's doing very badly with the nicest car in the country is like a Buick.
It's a new economic like forecast. What's the nicest car in your country? A what? Oh God!
Some like Chinese mother, honey. You have to get with him. He drives a Buick. Jesus.
And people would ask me about it. I would just be polite and just be like, "Oh yeah, I've heard they're all right cars or whatever." But it was just in my head. I'm just like, it's like these people are going crazy over a Buick. Like, buy a Toyota, my man.
But you know who also probably enjoyed his Buick?
I mean, Fidel Castro Kennedy? Is probably driving around in a much better car than that.
No, I don't think Kennedy enjoys Buicks.
Anyway.
Wait, was that a Buick that he got clapped in?
No, I have no idea. That's probably a Lincoln.
Oh, probably.
It was probably a Lincoln. Let me just check real quick. Quick.
Steve needs to know.
Steve's like, it's a Buick.
What car manufacturer? Let me suggest a Google phrase. Car manufacturer Kennedy brain soup bowl.
He was killed in a Ford.
Holy Ford. Shit, oh, okay. Dude.
Henry Ford from
It was a Lincoln. Halfway. It was a Lincoln, but it was assembled by the Ford Motor Company.
Oh, so it's a Lincoln then, because yeah, Ford owns Lincoln. Yeah, so it's a Lincoln then. Okay.
Ford stands for Forgive Our Recent Depresentation.
Forgive us, we told him to put the top on.
It's too many letters, dude. You ever play that game when you're driving down the road?
Yeah.
Just like anagrams and stuff found on road dead.
Fix it again, Tony.
I always hear, whenever someone says that, I hear Boomhauer. Not Boomhauer, Dale. Yeah. Fix it again, Tony.
All right, so today we will be finishing up our discussion of Operation Mongoose, this time talking about the multiple attempts to kill one Fidel Castro.
About freaking time. Spent 40 minutes last episode going over the man's beard care routine.
With a beard that nice, I mean, you got to make sure that you take care of it.
As a man with a beard, I appreciate it. Okay,
look, I know you don't have one. I don't have a beard, but I totally appreciate the idea. You know, my buddy Jason had this. He had this tremendous beard, and he was saying like he has to lotion it. And like put like beard butter and oil in it and keep it and constantly wash it. I'm like, oh my God.
Fuck or you just that. Treat it like hair. You treat it like hair.
That's I will it. Never wash grow
it,
a beard.
You clean it. I have yeah, beard oil.
You gotta have like a food
nice
comb.
And soft.
Yeah.
That makes your beard soft and you use the right brush. It keeps it soft and keeps it like down so you don't look like you're homeless.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in April of 1960. But in April of 1967, the Inspector General issued a report on the various plots conceived to assassinate one Fidel Castro. The report separates plots out into several time frames, starting from prior to August 1960 and ending in late 1962 until well into 1963. While confirmed, the assassination plots are, quote-unquote, an imperfect history, and due to the quote-unquote sensitivity of the operations being discussed, quote-unquote, no official records were kept regarding planning, authorizations, or the implementation of such plots. A key form of documentation used to construct the timeline of plots was oral testimony collected years after the plots were originally planned. So the first efforts to against Fidel Castro were not to assassinate him. The CIA originally conceived plans to undermine his image. In 1960, from March through August, the CIA planned to sabotage his speeches. The Inspector General report details, quote unquote, at least three and perhaps four schemes that were under consideration during a time range between March and August of 1960.
Like take the speech and then like cross out certain things and like put in like Mad Lib words. You know,
yeah.
My generations, my countrymen, what we need here is a fork. Wait.
they just paid a guy who was up on the stage to have like the fart box.
The U.S. is always interested in Cuban. Wait, microwaves? Wait, what?
Guys, what's an adverb?
Oh man.
It is speculated that all of the schemes considered at this time could have been in the planning process at the same time. The first plan in this time frame involved an attack on the radio station Castro used to, quote-unquote, broadcast his speeches with an aerosol spray of chemical that produced reactions similar to those of lysergic acid, or LSD.
I mean, they could have just shot Axe body spray at him in sufficient quantity.
But, like, again, what do they think was going to happen just spraying them like they're crop-dusting a radio station?
I just find it funny because, again, like, Kennedy was just like, well, we can't let people know that we're doing this thing that we're obviously doing. So they come up with these Looney Tunes, like, plans in order to implement them. Whereas, like, it's sort of like that joke about the Soviet Union and the pen to write in space. Yeah. It's like, we just used a pencil. And it's like, well, yeah, the Soviet Union, when they overthrew governments, they would just, like, shoot the people.
Yeah, they didn't care. And I'm like, all right, that's it. Bye-bye. Have a nice day.
Oh, my God.
Nothing, though, came of this plot because the chemical could not be relied on to produce the intended effects.
But, I mean, what did they think was going to happen? Like, what did they... You dose a fucking AM radio DJ with LSD. Like, what do you think is... Like, what? I don't understand the outcome of that.
Well, Castro would be in there, and he would also get dosed. And so, like, mid-speech, okay. He would just, like, start talking about, like, how we're all, like, made of energy and how positive he feels about everything.
I thought they were trying to fucking dose like MJ and BJ in the morning. Like, what are they gonna do?
I mean, Castro is infamous for having like 3-4 hour speeches, and I imagine if he just started talking about like a lot of my friends that did like psychedelics in high school, where he just started talking about how we're like all energy and like just sort of like the positive like warm feeling he was feeling.
Right.
Like, I don't think anybody would have noticed, and they would have, like, probably taken it positively, like, oh, yeah. That's really cool. That's what socialism gives us.
Okay. All right.
Jake Esterline, an involver in these plots, claimed that a box of cigars, which was treated with chemicals, was also considered in the plot to assassinate Castro. The scheme was that the chemical would produce a quote-unquote temporary personality disorientation, and having quote-unquote Castro smoke one before making a speech would result in Castro making a public spectacle of himself.
Okay.
But they were found to be ineffective. So they just got him regular cigars and had him smoke them for 45 to 50 years, and then he died.
Playing the long game.
He died of it. He died of what we give him.
Now, Mr. President, if we keep supplying him with these cigars, I do believe within 40 to 50 years, he will be dead.
That's your short story idea right there, is that cigarettes and cigars were actually good for you prior to Castro gaining power, and that's when Philip Morris introduced all the bad chemicals.
Bro, please do not add any more conspiracy theories into the world right now. There's good lord.
They found that people bought more cigarettes when they added the poisons in. So they just kept putting more poisons in. You know?
How do you think your grandparents lived to be 90 years old smoking pack of Marlboro Reds every day? Poisons.
Have some before you go to bed, dear.
Everybody smoked in the 40s and the 50s.
Now, Mr. President, my good friend Philip Morris has assured me that these cigars.
Era, I don't like Morris. Era.
Estrine later admitted that even though he could not exactly the guy that sort of like brought about the knowledge of this plot to the public, with his testimony, he later admitted that even though he could not exactly recall what the cigars were intended to do, he did not believe that they were lethal.
What? How do you?
This is contradicted by one Sidney Gottlieb of MK Ultra fame.
That piece of shit.
Who said he remembers the scheme and he was also being concerned with killing.
But you can't really believe anything Sidney Gottlieb says, because Sidney Gottlieb is like a gigantic piece of shit.
Yeah, it's sort of like a lot of these guys, you got to use like pro wrestler rules. That they're just all like itinerant liars, so they're just going to constantly lie about what they did and what they accomplished and what they were planning to do.
Right. And he wasn't even like all that good of a chemist, if I'm recalling correctly, like with his time in MKUltra, where he had like, he was the idea man, but his ideas were dumb as shit. And he was not like, in effect, a good chemist. He wasn't good at putting together, you know, concoctions to kill people with those people.
Toys. And I believe also he was involved in pinball.
I hate you. I think he had the idea to add the lead to Tonka truck paint, okay? Like that kind of level of just
There's too many kids. I mean, I think we can all get on the same page here, right? There's just too many kids. And so how are you going to fix that, you know? Because everyone's just going to accuse you of genocide and you're really just trying to help out. So you just doctor the paint, you know?
I mean, it's just perfectly normal to create a toy that one child can kill another child with very easily.
Yeah.
In multitude of ways.
And here's the thing. If they do it, I mean, it was going to happen eventually. You're just helping them take care when they're small and they can do the least amount of damage to, like, the real estate market in that neighborhood, you know?
Fucking hell. It was like, Sidney Gottlieb isn't even, like, on the level of, like, Alexander Shulgin.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, him.
Yeah. Who's like
Sidney
the guy
Gottlieb's
that was like,
not even on the level of John Buster Schmitz. What?
Well, Shulgin, which is like it's sort of like an alias he went by. Oh. He was like one of the greatest like psychedelic researchers because he would like experiment with them on himself.
Like Aldous.
And he was just like, yeah, and he was just like a brilliant chemist. And like part of his deal with the government was that he would do all this research and he would give it to the government. But he was also like, you know, doing like psychedelic drugs on himself and like people he knew. And,
I mean, like, that's all the CIA results. Was doing with them. They were doing like dosing each other.
He was doing some Ari Shaffir stuff.
The CIA also tried to embarrass Castro by attempting to sneak thallium salts. Which is a potent depilatory or a hair remover into Castro's shoes, which would quote unquote cause his beard, eyebrows, and pubic hair to fall out.
Wow!
My beard. All right, fine. Pubic hair. You're getting a little close to home, but eyebrows. Like that's too much for me. You know.
Yeah.
You could shave the other two before you shave the eyebrows. I mean, because, you know, nobody's going to know if I'm upset. You know?
You know, the CIA guys, they were watching, you know, like 1966 Batman, and they were just like, well, you know, Cesar Romero won't shave his mustache for the role.
Nope.
That must mean that it's important. So if we get rid of Fidel's beard and mustache, that'll completely destroy his credibility among the Hispanic community.
God, we were so fucking stupid in the 60s.
A 2011 declassified CIA volume titled Air Operations March 1960 to April 1961.
Was it Air Operations?
It's no, Air Operations. It's Air.
Air.
A-A-A-A-A-H. Air. Air.
But they did happen in the era of March 1960 to April of 1961.
God. The air operations happened in the era of 1960.
Which was from the comprehensive official history of the Bay of Pigs operation made the indication that it was clear from the outset that air operations would play a key role in the CIA program to oust the Cuban leader. Hmm. By the summer of 1960, the JMAT team, under the direct command of Richard M. Bissell and the DPD, strove to acquire quote-unquote aircraft for infiltration, propaganda, and supply drops to dissent groups within Cuba. By July of 1960, it became clear that quote-unquote tactical air operations with combat aircraft would play a major role in JMAT operations.
So, I mean, at this point, they're just talking about all-out war.
Well,
tactical air operations. I mean, dude, you're
Well, it's mainly just like dropping things in. They're not planning on like bombing anything at this point.
Okay. With combat aircraft.
Well, yeah, they're going to use combat aircraft.
They're not going to fly over it. I need to take this fucking Apache and go drop in propaganda.
No, they call Kennedy calls like Germany and any of those night witches still around. By the way, that's a former episode of the Trilateral Troika.
Excellent one.
One of the best Ryan episodes.
Yeah, President Das Night Witch is Russian. Don't give me the run around, you goddamn kraut.
Oh my god. Should I believe kraut?
No, that's fine. I think Germans are like Italians.
You know, yeah, you're always allowed to make
fun of Germans. Steve, I'm going to buy you a fucking t-shirt that says, I think Germans are like Italians. I'm going to have you go walk around in fucking Newark.
And then, listen, and then we're all going to go to Oktoberfest and you're going to wear that shirt.
Yeah.
You're going to have me do the
And then people go, what the fuck does your shirt even mean? And Steve just looks at him and says, you know.
He's got a QR card, a QR code linked to this episode.
It's a QR code. Go ahead.
It's just going to be the third Die Hard movie, but instead of
Italians, yeah, you know, Germans are just like Italians, you know.
Walk around Little Italy, they're all just like following you around with just rings on their pinkies.
A bunch of like Jersey Shore guys, yeah, like yelling at me, throwing stuff at me.
Get out of here! We don't need you here. What? I'm just thinking about it for a minute. They're just like them.
Just swiping their chins at me.
Yep.
In August of 1960, the CIA enlisted mobsters with quote unquote gambling syndicate contacts to aid in the assassination of Castro. Bissell placed the origin of this idea on J.C. King, whom was chief of Western Hemisphere Division.
J.C.
Bissell had CIA contact Robert Mayhew, pulling Johnny Roselli, a member of the Syndicate of Las Vegas.
I feel like I'm listening to the beginning of Goodfellas, just naming all these
Johnny Roselli, there was Mayhew, there was Pencil Pete.
There was Skinny Pete, there was Fat Pete. Strangely enough, Skinny Pete was fat.
There's Wendy, Wawa, Walmart.
Well, of course, Skinny Pete's fat. It's just a standard mafia name where, you know, you do the opposite.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Richard Bissell had CIA contact Robert Mayhew, also disguised as relations executive for a company suffering severe financial losses in Cuba due to the actions of Castro, offer Roselli $150,000 for the successful assassination of Castro. Mm-hmm.
That's it? Oh, 60s money. Okay.
Yeah, that's under $50,000 in like 1960s money. So that's like $1 billion.
Okay. It looks like you're going to assassinate a world leader for fucking $150,000, boy. Cheap.
This gentleman is why we don't have free healthcare. As much as people joke about, like, oh, the military budget, like, we'll let them see why we don't have free healthcare. It's like, no, this is why we don't have free healthcare.
Right here.
Roselli provided involved co-conspirator, one quote-unquote Sam Gold, later to be identified as Chicago gangster Sam Giancana, and Joe the Courier, quote-unquote, who was later identified as Santos Traficante, who was the Cosa Nostra chieftain of Cuba.
Well, Miami, but...
Well, yeah, he was Miami, and then he got bumped to Cuba, just like every other like guy that used to be in charge of Cuba got bumped to Miami.
You think that's a promotion going from Miami to Cuba, or you think that's a demotion?
I think it's a demotion.
Think so?
Because I think Cuba was lawless enough during like the Batista regime that like if you were a person of means and money, like you could do whatever you wanted. But like even in Miami during that period, if you were of means and money, like there were still limitations to what you could get away with.
Okay. So you think it would be a demotion to go to Cuba?
No, it would be a demotion to go to Miami.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I believe that's true to this day.
As somebody who just came back from Miami last week, if you got enough money, you could do whatever the fuck you want to do down there, man.
Okay. Well, then I take it back.
Edward Gunn recalled receiving a box of cigars that he was tasked with poisoning. However, the cigars were destroyed by Gunn in 1963.
He smoked them. He just fucking smoked them.
Quote unquote, destroyed.
Yeah, exactly. Just like the cops destroy beer they take from minors and you destroy marijuana.
You put what on them? I said arsenic, not ambisol. He's just going to get numb lips. What are you doing?
He quote-unquote crushed the cigars.
Yeah, right. I destroyed the cigars with fire.
Several schemes in regards to the best way to deliver the syndicate poison that were considered during the time period included, number one, something highly toxic to be administered with a pin. Number two, a bacterial material in a liquid form. And number three, bacterial treatment of a cigarette or cigar. And number four, a handkerchief treated with bacteria.
Huh, when it got the idea handkerchief treated with bacteria?
According to Bissell, the most viable option presented was bacterial liquids. The final product, however, was solid botulin pills that would dissolve in liquid.
So they're trying to kill him.
Yes,
I don't want to hear what fuck Sidney Gottlieb's got to say about, well, I don't think we were trying to kill him. Right. Nah, you motherfuckers are trying to kill this guy.
No, Gottlieb said the opposite, where the one guy was like, yeah, initially we weren't trying to kill him, but then Gottlieb's like, he's doing sort of like the Chappelle Show bit, like the History Channel, like, yeah. He's like, oh yeah, we were trying to kill him.
Absolutely.
Can you repeat the question? Roselli, along with associate Sam Gold, used their connection to coerce Cuban official Juan Horta to perform the assassination through his gambling bills. Horta, after being provided several pills of quote-unquote high lethal content, reportedly attempted the assassination multiple times, but eventually pulled out after getting quote-unquote cold feet. The Inspector General's report asserts that Horta had lost his access to Castro prior to him receiving the pills, and thus could not complete the task. Roselli did find another officer, Dr. Anthony Verona, to perform the assassination.
Doctor? To perform an assassination?
Yeah, a high-ranking doctor within the Cuban regime.
That's pretty fucked. Oh, well, Cuban. Do Cuban doctors have to take the Hippocratic Oath?
I believe all doctors have to take the Hippocratic Oath.
Uh-oh, Dr. Verona, you're fucking up.
From April of 1961 to late 1961 is the next period. The plan to assassinate Castro by poison pill was canceled after the Bay of Pigs. The Inspector General's report speculates that the attempt failed because Castro no longer visited the restaurant where the pill was supposed to be administered to him.
That sounds like the dumbest reason for it not to work. He stopped eating at the ground round, so... We couldn't give him any of this.
God, now, that was a fucking throwback.
Now, Mr. President, this pill is specifically developed to fit inside the ice cream that is served within a baseball batting helmet.
At Friendly's.
Now, Mr. President, if it is not within the soft serve within 5 minutes, this pill is inoperable. I cannot carry on this machine.
You put the pill in a fribble. That's a strawberry milkshake. He'll never get it. He's not one of those men who likes to suck up the last bits of the milkshake with a straw.
You know how long it's been since I've heard the word
like Maryland.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Maryland's entire life is one big fribble. You should see her fribbles.
The plan to assassinate Castro by poisoned pill was canceled, though, like I said. Yeah. And the second phase of the gambling syndicate operation began in May of 1961 with Project ZR Rifle, which was headed by Harvey.
See, that probably failed too because it's a stupid fucking name.
ZR Rifle?
Yes.
Sounds like ZR Mower.
Right.
Harvey was responsible for 8 assassination attempts on Castro, but none of these attempts were proficient at accomplishing any of their objectives.
Don't be nice. Just hellishly fucked up.
The portion of the scheme contained, quote-unquote, an executive action capability, a general standby capability to carry out assassination when required.
Okay.
Project ZR Rifle, its main purpose was to spot potential agents and research assassination techniques that might be used.
The name of this shit sounds like a fucking gun that Lockheed Martin created. Introducing the ZR Rifle. It can shoot around corners. Like, it's ridiculous.
Lockheed Martin Lawrence.
Project ZR Rifle and the agency's operations in Cuba funneled into a program in November of 1961 when Harvey became the head of the task force for Cuba. Conflicting accounts in the general's report of how later events during this time period played out make it difficult to discern the path of how the Cuba task force handled its operations. However, there is a consensus that Roselli again became involved with the agency along with Verona.
The doctor.
Yes.
Okay.
As the months of 1962 went by, Verona constructed a team of 3 men to strike at Castro. However, these plans were canceled twice, with the inspector general's report citing, quote-unquote, conditions inside, then the October missile crisis threw plans awry. The conclusion Harvey drew to this is that, quote-unquote, the 3 militia never did leave for Cuba. The connections between Roselli and the CIA fell apart once Harvey had been notified that Roselli was on the FBI's watch list.
Was Roselli the mobster? Is that why he was on the watch list?
Yes. Okay. During this time period, generally, mafioso aren't on, like, FBI watch lists.
Mm-hmm.
Because J. Edgar Hoover, for whatever reason, doesn't believe that the mafia exists. Like, when they talk about La Cosa Nostra, like the thing of ours, La Cosa Nostra.
La Cosa Nostra sounds like a shop in, like, Daytona on the beach, you know?
But generally doesn't believe in it. And one of the theories is that J. Edgar Hoover has been in bed with the mafia since he started.
That would be my guess. If you're going to deny the mafia exists and you're the head of the FBI, bitch, they're paying you.
And there's a number of theories of why that is. And, like, one of them is that they knew that, like, Jagger was gay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that he was in a homosexual relationship with his assistant. And, like,
oh, is that true? I didn't know he was gay. I just knew he was a crossdresser.
Yeah, he was in a relationship with his assistant, and, like, they would always get invited to parties together, like a couple, and, like, they would always go on vacation together, and, like, they would spend so much time together that the only, like, logical assumption is that these guys are our relationship.
These guys must be, you know.
Yeah.
Those mm-hmm. guys.
Yep.
But there's a theory that...
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
a little light in the loafers, as my grandfather would say.
Oh, my God. Yeah. My grandfather
as Martin would also say. Yeah. But there's either the theory that they knew that and they held it against him, or that J. Edgar was perfectly willing to work with them in order to undermine both black people and communists, who were the two groups that he was most, like, worried about.
Sounds more, like, that sounds more like what it is.
Yeah, I don't think that... I honestly think that he would be more willing to step on the necks of minorities more than the head of the fucking FBI being blackmailed.
Because Jagger hated, like, black people. He hated black people.
Oh, yeah,
like,
he was bad.
Pretty sure the head of the FBI could have gotten rid of them dudes who were trying to blackmail him, especially for something as serious as I'm in a homosexual relationship and I wear women's panties under my suit pants at meetings in the White House. Like, I'm pretty sure he could get rid of them dudes.
Well, first off, right, they feel good, okay?
You were worn 100% silk panties from Victoria's Secret, bro. Them things are comfortable.
They don't let you breathe. They don't breathe. That's the problem.
In 1987, reflections on the Cuban Missile Crisis, Raymond L. Garthoff, he wrote that by November 8th, the United States had begun perceptibly to stiffen its insistence on various issues not resolved by the October 28th Kennedy-Khrushchev agreement, including what the Soviets could only see as an effort to backpedal on what was, for them, the key question remaining, American assurances not to attack Cuba. One of the big problems with Kennedy, as I've mentioned before, is that Kennedy is like incredibly incapable of like meeting someone like Khrushchev at the table. Because when he met with Khrushchev to like talk things out before like the Berlin Wall went up, like we essentially have the Berlin Wall because Kennedy was incapable of like standing up to Khrushchev's like bullying him. And that's why the Berlin Wall exists.
Like, how did that dude not have a spine? You're the president of the United States with arguably the most firepower, let's just say, in the world.
Didn't he actually have spine problems or something?
He had
some serious back problems.
I think it's Atchison's disease.
Well, he also wore a back brace constantly because of he got injured somehow in World War II.
I think he was watching TikTok and he saw some chiropractors give him the advice. And
was he in World War II or was
yeah.
World War II? Yeah,
or Korea.
I think he was injured in the singing of like PT-109.
Yeah,
he did have that like disorder though that I think was like congenitive.
Right?
No, it was I think it was Atchison's disease.
Then he had scoliosis and lice. Like when you were in school and they took you down to check you for those two things. Like he was the only kid there that day that like dinged positive on both, and they had to lock down the school. You know,
I mean that's fucking hilarious.
Era got lice and bad back.
Why is my head so itchy?
Why do I sound like an adult?
he had Addison's disease, which is an adrenal gland disorder.
Specifically for his back, he did have chronic back pain though because of injuries suffered during the sinking of PT-109. Though he did constantly wear a back brace and was on—I don't know if he was actually taking like narcotic pain meds, but I know that they kept him pretty doped up.
Ryan, you don't have to say narcotic pain meds. All right, that's if it doesn't have a narcotic in it, don't even tell me it's a pain med. All right,
bro, have you never had Toradol? Oh my god, that's the greatest thing in the fucking world.
I think
no narcotics.
I think JFK had Toradol for breakfast every morning.
Marilyn, bring down some of the Toradol. It's in the dish in the hallway.
No, it's in a box like Cheerios added to some milk.
Because he infamously had a doctor who was called like Dr. Feelgood. And one thing too, like he did have the back pain, and also too, like he did literally carry a guy on his back to like save his life.
Yeah.
After the sinking of the ship. So it's not just like, yeah, JFK was injured in the war. It's like JFK was also injured, like committing like a massive act of heroism during
the war. He was an American hero. Okay. Which, and I'm not going to have you disgrace his name on this show.
which is not what you expect from the Kennedys, who are terrible family of awful people.
100,000%.
What do you mean, Steve?
We're going to do a whole 19-parter on the Kennedy.
I don't know. Steve, let's talk about some of the lakes of Massachusetts.
Okay. I don't even know any.
No, I was just going to say because, you know, Ted Kennedy.
Oh, yeah. He's still alive. He's in Texas.
Such a piece of shit.
So, like I said, there was these attacks to on Cuba that sort of went against what the agreements were with Khrushchev, and it sort of causes tension. And on that date as well, a Cuban covert action sabotage team dispatched from the United States successfully blew up a Cuban industrial facility.
Hell yeah.
Garthoff,
USA.
So the sabotage had been planned before the October 28 agreement and was beyond recall when the Kennedy administration realized it was still in progress. However, quote unquote, to the Soviets, this was probably seen as a subtle American reminder of its ability to harass and attempt to subvert the Castro regime. Noam Chomsky also says the sabotage killed, quote unquote, 400 workers, according to the Cuban government letter to the UN Secretary General.
Okay, did 400 workers actually die, or is that just bullshit?
Well, we don't know, because that's what the Cuban government says, and it's not like we can, you know, send people down there to check, or back then to check.
Why not?
In your view, which is going to be the official view of the Trial of Troika podcast, are they full of shit, or like, are they just fudging the numbers? Did nobody die? What happened? Tell me, Steve.
I'm... I'm going to take the tanky stance, and they killed 4,000 Cubans.
4,000.
That certainly, as said, maybe Garthoff's view, but the general provocations of the Cubans and Soviets ran at odds with both JFK's missile crisis defusing pledge to remove the U.S. Jupiter missiles from Turkey in exchange for the withdrawal of Soviet missiles from Cuba and efforts made towards the rapprochement with Castro in the aftermath of the crisis. The missile swap had been seen by many as an even trade that saved face for both sides when considering the capabilities of each to deliver a serious strike to the other. Kennedy had subsequently sought dialogue with Castro to reverse the two nations' acrimonious relationship. As a result of the CIA's continued defiance, tensions between the president and the agency festered since the failed Bay of Pigs invasion continued to escalate. In early 1963, the CIA devised a plot to provide Castro with a diving suit contaminated with fungus and quote-unquote contaminating the breathing apparatus with tubercle bacilli.
The breathing apparatus. The suit is not working. I believe there is a fungus among us. I can't do a Cuban accent. I just want to hear a Cuban person say fungus among us.
I was just thinking that bit from The Simpsons where Mr. Burns has like the $1 trillion bill. And Castro asks to see it, and he shows it to him, and then he asks for it back. Castro says, what bill? This plan, though, was never implemented, but it was speculated that a diving suit had been purchased with the intention of giving it to Castro. Yeah, like, the CIA just has, like, a closet in, like, their main office. It's just, like, the projects they never started to assassinate Fidel Castro. various other methods of assassination that have been thought of by the CIA included exploding seashells, having a former lover slip in poison pills, exposing him to various other poisoned items such as a fountain pen and even ice cream.
A fountain pen.
There it is, the Fribble.
I love Fribbles, man. I want a Fribble.
Now, when Mr. Castro visits the United States, he's going to want to visit a Shoney's. And when he does visit
Shoney's. Take me to the nearest Sizzler.
Oh, Shoney's, though.
Just have that guy, that actor who always plays like the CIA, like the shadowy, like CIA, like bad guy, just like talking about it. Like, now when Mr. Castro visits the Shoney's, we ensure he has a good time.
We want him to get the full Shoney's experience. sir, if he goes to a Shoney's, the sudden change in diet will do enough. Give me another one. What did you call this? Grilled cheese.
Along plans to assassinate Castro was one to eliminate one Rolando Cabela, a Cuban revolutionary hero.
Yeah, the plot for Cabela in outdoor stores.
Cabela. That's Cabela.
Yeah, you said Dubella.
Cubella.
Oh, Cubella. Cubella. You said Cabela. You did that thing. It could go either way. Now I know it doesn't.
The plot for Cubella began as an operation to recruit someone close to Castro to launch a coup. The U.S. Senate's Church Committee of November 1975.
His name is Cubella. That's what it is.
Stated that it had confirmed at least 8 separate CIA-run plots to assassinate Castro. Fabian Escalante, who was long tasked with protecting the life of Castro, contends that there have been 638 separate CIA assassination schemes or attempts on Castro's life.
Fabian Escalante sounds like the name of like a thief character in like a JRPG.
Yeah. He sounds like an NPC in like an Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah.
That just bumps into you and walks away.
Yeah, exactly. Excuse me. All your gills missing. Fuck. If
pretty now I gotta find this guy at a save point and beat him. Because the assassination of Castro seemed to be an important goal of the Kennedy administration, a myth has been created in American history that Kennedy was obsessed with the idea of killing Castro. However, it seems likely this is not true. An article entitled "The Castro Assassination Plot" states, quote unquote, CIA plots to kill Castro began before John Kennedy won the presidency, and they continued after he was dead. Which is true. We could all say it's honest. I think like every Cuban leader since Fidel Castro has also been like slated for assassination.
Right.
I mean, like I feel like the CIA probably has some secret deal. Like if you want your student loans forgiven, like if you cap the leader of Cuba, they'll do that.
I mean, I think everyone in the United States would be like, yeah, all right.
You would have 290 people like, all right, listen, get me on the first flight over to Cuba. I got you, bro.
I'm done. Let's do it.
Kennedy, though, was not keen on assassinating Castro. In a meeting with Ted Sulzak, a reporter for the Washington Bureau of the New York Times, President Kennedy stated how strongly he and his brother felt that the United States, for moral reason, should never be in a situation having recourse to assassination.
JFK seems to have very weird morals. He'll fuck the shit out of strippers and hookers, but like morally on like a public facing stance, he's always seems to be doing the correct thing.
Yeah, like I feel like with him, like, you know, like just like, you know, adultery is not like a high sin, but like having a foreign leader like just like drug out into a field and like kill like Lumumba is like unexcusable for him.
It's wild, like, isn't it?
I feel like he draws a line, whereas like Eisenhower had no problem with either of those things. Ike in that picture where he's giving you the come hither look as he's sitting in that glove scene. In a report written by the CIA's Inspector General in 1967, he admits that this is the reason behind the fanciful nature of many of the assassination attempts. He also said he warned that assassinating Castro would not necessarily destabilize the government in the manner that is desired. He didn't think that think the assassination of Castro would do much to free Cuba from communist control. He mentions that people became too focused on the idea of killing Castro when, quote unquote, getting rid of Castro doesn't have to mean killing him. Due to this micro focus, broader, more complex plans with greater chances of success were not made. Many assassination ideas were also floated by the CIA during Operation Mongoose, other than the ones discussed. The most famous was their alleged plot to capitalize on his well-known love of cigars by slipping into his supply a very, very real and lethal, quote-unquote, exploding cigar. While numerous sources state the exploding cigar plot as fact, at least one source asserts it is simply a myth, and another dismisses it as a mere supermarket tabloid fodder.
It sounds like something that in like a meeting room, somebody threw out as an idea. Everybody laughed for a minute. It was written down just because it was an idea that was thrown out, but it was just never really like actually thought of to be a legitimate thing that could be accomplished. It
sounds like something like one of the draftsmen in the room like drew on a napkin, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and just like look, it's just like a picture of Castro as a cartoon, and then his front of it just goes boof, you know?
Like his 6-year-old watched Looney Tunes that morning, and he was like, you know, Wile E. Coyote had some good ideas. My son, let me take notes.
My son Noah had a great idea.
Like Eisenhower's drawings of himself, where he's the muscle man. He would do during like briefings. But yeah, it's just one of those things where it was pointed out, and they're just like, well, this is a ridiculous plot. But also, you have to remember that like the U.S. Army, like apparently this is not a thing that's uncommon. That pretty much every general, when they ask like the R&D guys, like the R&D guys will ask them like, well, what do you want? And they'll say like, I want a nuclear hand grenade. And it's like, well, that's impossible.
We'll write that down. We'll take that note. We got that. We'll get back to you. But is there anything realistic that you want us to do?
And I think it's one of those things that, too, we assume. I know, like, those of us in the podcast here, like, we know that, like, even people in, like the highest levels of government are, like, absolute dumbasses, as we've proven time and again throughout every country on the face of the earth. But there's just like, there's just guys where you just generally assume like, well, yeah, that person's in charge. Like they should probably know that that's not going to work. And then they'll just throw like the dumbest shit at you. And you just to be like, well, okay.
You just have to look at them and smile and say, yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll do that. You just go back to your office and don't hurt anybody. Go ahead. Bye-bye.
Another suggests that the story has origins in the CIA, but has never been seriously proposed by them as a plot. They also believe that the plot was made up by the CIA as an intentionally silly idea to feed to those questioning them about their plans for Castro in order to deflect scrutiny from serious areas of inquiry.
And the saddest thing is an exploding cigar was probably the best fucking idea you had. You just have to implement it correctly. But that's probably the best fucking idea you could have. You know the dude smokes like a goddamn Navajo chief.
Yeah.
You know he's eventually going to get to that cigar.
Navajo chief.
Oh, the peace pipe.
But you know by the time, you know, he gets to it and then it blows up, he's just going to be, like, covered in soot. And behind him's going to be covered in soot. He's going to have that half-exploded cigar in his mouth. And he's just going to hobble away and he's just going to come back. That's just what Castro does.
He probably just keep it in his mouth the whole time and then take it down and just be like, they failed again.
So I didn't realize this, but there are people that will like light a cigar, puff on it for a couple minutes, intentionally let it go out, and then the only thing they do with it after that is just fucking chew on it.
That's weird.
Like they chew on the end of it, not the end that was lit, obviously. Like, but like they don't light it again; they just chew on it. It's disgusting.
Well, if they chewed on the end that was lit, they're probably masochists, but.
Well, you know, I've seen people put lit cigarettes on their tongue and they tell me it doesn't hurt, but I'm like, you're out of your fucking mind. Get away from me. Just take my order, okay? It's going to be a large iced coffee.
Another attempt at Castro's life was by way of a fountain pen loaded with poison Black Leaf 40 and passed to a Cuban asset in Paris the day of President Kennedy's assassination, November 22nd, 1963.
Late November back in 63, someone shot President Kennedy.
Is that a real song?
No, I just made it up.
Yeah, it's actually not bad, man.
No, it's late December 1963. I'm just dubbing.
Oh.
He's going to take the 1963 top 10 charts by storm. Notably, the evidence also indicates that these two events occurred simultaneously in the same moment.
Really affect me.
So they're going to expect me to believe that somebody handed a poison pen to somebody in Paris at the same moment that Secret Service agent shot John Kennedy?
Yeah, man.
Yes.
And then as soon as it happened in that exact moment.
No, because that would have been first thing in the morning, which means that would have been 10 o'clock at night in Paris.
It's the MacGyver.
It was the afternoon, so it would have been 10 o'clock at night in Paris when that happened.
Rolando Cubella, the potential assassin, contests this account, saying Black Leaf 40 was not in the pen. U.S. intelligence later responded to say that Black Leaf 40 was merely a suggestion, but Cubella thought that there were other poisons that would be more effective. Overall, he was unimpressed with the device. The inventor understood that Cubella rejected the device altogether.
Imagine being the CIA, and you're going to give a pen that's going to murder another human being to like one of your like spies or whatever.
It's not a marker, it's a murker.
This is trash. this is garbage. I'm not using this. Like, you're the CIA. You got unlimited funds. You got the best minds in the business for R&D. And somebody looked at you like, this is stupid as shit. What is this? No.
Terrible.
After Operation Mongoose was ended, the Kennedy administration made some attempts to mend relations with the Cuban government. Why? As some documents released by the National Security Archive reveal.
No, seriously, why?
Because it's a fucking country 90 miles off our southern border.
Yeah, but it just seems very odd. It's like
Kennedy didn't really want Castro killed. It was everybody else who wanted Castro killed.
Yeah, but they definitely didn't want Castro in charge.
Well, I think the idea is you have the American incentive that when you see a government in South America you don't like, you instantly coup it.
Right.
And then when that didn't work, they're just like, well, we can kill him. And then Kennedy, who is like the soft boy, he's just sort of like waffling on it. Like, he's just like, well, maybe we can get along with Castro. And then eventually what comes around is that, like, well, we tried to kill this guy like 60 times with all your Looney Tunes schemes and it didn't work. So let's just try working out with him, because you have to remember at this time there is a communist government that is aligned with the United States of America, and that is Yugoslavia.
Right.
So there is a possibility of a Cuba, communist government being allied with the United States. And, like, honestly, if the United States had done things differently from the beginning, like, Cuba could have just been, like, Yugoslavia.
Yeah, but if I had done things differently from the beginning, I would have got more drink before I sat down at the beginning of the fucking podcast, you know? I
mean, yeah, and if my grandmother had wheels, she'd be a bicycle.
She'd be a bicycle, That fucking cooking thing.
No, that is the funniest thing in the world.
Like, it sort of tastes like a, I forget what she says.
She said carbonara.
He's like, no, it's not a carbonara. Yeah, my grandmother had wheels, she'd be a bicycle. Yeah.
She's like, oh, if you made carbonara, but you could make it with, like, deli ham and eggs.
And the guy whole just, premise like, of that show is that chef gets upset. It's like the peak of British comedy.
As she was talking, he was just staring.
Yo, let me tell you something. Like, you think the French are bad? The Italians will fucking kill you over, like, food purity. They'll fucking kill you. Like, there's a fucking video online. It's an old dude, and it's like a fresh, like a family aged, like homemade prosciutto.
Yeah,
and prosciutto. It's like a cured ham just for everybody. So anyway,
Oh no, fucking gabagool!
So he's doing that, and his son's there, and he's cutting slices off of it, and you're supposed to take little slices off of it and eat it. But instead of that, he like hacks into the prosciutto with the knife, the fucking grandfather freaks out, just like man, like that. It's just like, oh man. So then he like goes back to doing it the normal way, and then he hacks at it again. Fucking this old man, he's got to be in his 80s, just smacks him in the face.
Hell yeah, he fucking should wasted food like that, bro.
Just start strangling him. Just start strangling him like Bart Simpson.
Tongue popping out of his head.
As some documents released by the National Security Archive reveal, this sort of turn on Cuba happened right after the project ended. One document comes in the form of an options paper from a Latin American specialist about how to fix relations. The document begins by suggesting that through the CIA's attempts to assassinate Castro and topple the government, they had, quote-unquote, been looking seriously only at one side of the coin, and that they could try to reverse side and try to quietly, or quote-unquote, quietly enticing Castro over to us. Mm-hmm. Which is like kind of like why I want to be a consultant, because you can just tell people like the most obvious shit ever. Yeah. You get paid for it, and then like they don't follow what you tell them.
No, it's like being a physical therapist. All right, I need you to do these for about 6 weeks, and you're going to feel a lot better. They go back in 4 weeks. Did you do your exercises? No. Okay.
The document goes on to push for further studies into how exactly they would go about improving relations. It also states the two possible outcomes that would come along with a better relationship with Cuba.
Send him Maryland.
Those are, in the short run, we would probably be able to neutralize at least two of our main worries about Castro, the reintroduction of offensive missiles and Cuban subversion. In the long run, we would be able to, we would work on eliminating Castro at our leisure and from a good vantage point. The effort to mend the relationship would be framed heavily by the negative relations formed due to Operation Mongoose. One issue that caused distrust between the relations of the U.S.-supported Cubans and the agency was a shaky front due to no real agreement among the Cubans and the agency. Quote-unquote, Cuban leaders wanted something to say about the course of paramilitary operations, which was according to an inspection done by Inspector General Pfeiffer.
First name Michelle.
Yes, the same. Questions arose within the inspection that included, if the project had been better conceived, better organized, better staffed, and better managed, would that precise issue ever had to be presented for presidential decision at all? Which is kind of like saying, you know, if this whole operation wasn't complete shit, it would have worked.
If my grandmother had wheels, she'd be a bicycle.
Yeah. Further investigation proved that 1,500 men would not have been enough for the from the start against Castro's large military force, as well as the agency's lack of quote-unquote top-flight handling, which altogether led to the complete failure of Operation Mongoose, as well as the Bay of Pigs.
Top-flight security of the world, Craig.
A commission led by General Maxwell Taylor, known as the Taylor Committee, investigated the failures of the Bay of Pigs invasion.
Deep to name that committee.
The objective was to find out who was responsible for the disaster. A memorandum from August 15th, 1961, lays out the definitive conclusion of the committee. Quote unquote, the leaders of the operation did not always present their case with sufficient force and clarity to the senior officers of the government to allow the latter to appreciate the consequences of their decisions. This remark applies in particular to the circumstances surrounding the cancellation of the D-Day strikes.
The D-Day strikes being the Bay of Pigs D-Day?
Yes. D-Day isn't like the day of attack.
Right.
In one of his volumes of an internal report written between 1974 and 1984, CIA chief historian Jack Pfeiffer criticized the Taylor Committee's investigation as it held the CIA primarily responsible for the Bay of Pigs fiasco. At the end of the fourth volume, Pfeiffer laments that Taylor had a hand in perpetuating the idea that, quote-unquote, President Kennedy was a white knight misled by overconfident, if not mischievous, CIA activists. Pfeiffer concluded that Taylor's study suffered from two major issues, bias to positively portray Kennedy, and a lack of time to prepare for the report. The Taylor Committee only had 3 weeks to prepare the report for Kennedy's deadline, to which Pfeiffer stated, there is no question that the report of the Cuban study group suffered from the haste with which it was prepared.
So basically, they did the book report the night before.
Yes, yeah, so they sort of rushed it out, and they did their best to like make Kennedy look good.
My book report on Old Yeller. It was about a dog who was old named Yeller. Thank you.
Yeller might have come from the fact that he was slightly yellow.
And loud. Now, Webster's defines yellow.
Webster's dictionary defines Fidel Castro.
Oh, God, that is a freshman high school fucking opening if I've ever heard.
Webster's dictionary defines
your size 14 essay with like double margins and spaces between sentences.
And when they do the character limit, you always make sure it's a Word document, because if it is, you just insert a bunch of blank characters all over the place.
Yeah, you just make sure to turn the font color to white and just put a bunch of like periods.
Listen, oh, you also gotta. Oh, I'm restricted to size 12 font. Cool, 12.5 hurt.
Pfeiffer also stated that from the start, it should have been clear that quote unquote President Kennedy's image would remain untarnished in the Taylor Committee report. At the end of his assessment of the Taylor Committee in Volume 4, Pfeiffer determined, CIA's leadership was not without fault, but the documentary evidence included in his examination of the Taylor Committee's investigation shows that the major causes of the failure, contrary to the image that has been and continues to be popularized, were directly attributable to actions or inactions of the Kennedy administration. Pfeiffer's investigation of the event culminated in 5 full volumes of writing. Pfeiffer intended to publish his study in the 1980s after he resigned with the intention of defending the CIA. However, the book was never published.
Oh, womp womp.
The 5th volume of the report was approved for release on August 9th, 2016, and finally released to the public on October 31st, 2016 by the CIA as part of changes to the Freedom of Information Act that, quote-unquote, requires us to release some drafts that are responsive to FOIA requests if they are more than 25 years old. This was stated by CIA chief historian David Robarge in a cover letter that announced the document's release, which came after the policy was codified by the FOIA Improvement Act of 2016.
What was the FOIA Improvement Act? Was it just more like allowance for people to request classified
information? Yeah, it essentially just improved the ability for people to request documents through the Freedom of Information Act.
Gotcha. Okay.
The report features new revelations such as a member of the Inspector General staff, Robert Schaefer, also remembers that Kirkpatrick directed team members to destroy all of their working papers relating to the survey because of the report's sensitivity. A memo sent to Pfeiffer on June 4th, 1981 from Inspector General Charles A. Briggs confirms this, stating, quote unquote, "We have no record of any Kirkpatrick working papers on this subject. As far as we can tell, all of the OIG survey team's working papers relating to the Bay of Pigs operation survey were destroyed in accordance with Kirkpatrick's instructions."
Nice.
A convincing criticism of Kirkpatrick's emphasis on the CIA's personal responsibility for the events of the Bay of Pigs may be found in Pfeiffer's last book. Similar to the remainder of the official history, the CIA historian attempts to shift the blame for, quote-unquote, "who lost Cuba" to other U.S. government agencies and authorities, particularly the Kennedy and the White House, while defending the agency against criticism from its own inspector general.
Interesting. I like how they have to say, "who lost Cuba."
But that's like the common thing, because they say, like, "who lost China?"
Yeah, but I mean, like, they act like it's the way it's phrased is absolute garbage. Like lost, like you had it in the first place.
Oh yeah, it's 100% just like the hubris of like the American government, if that just like we control everything. So like, if a government flips, it's definitely because we didn't do something or because we did something.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, no, these are human beings that live in a country.
Stop being so Americocentric, like.
That's like 1,000 miles away from us. Like, it's not a surprise that something happened that you didn't expect that seems to be to their benefit.
Right.
The Kirkpatrick report was still classified as secret when Pfeiffer initially attempted to have his criticism declassified. The expectation among those working in the agency who were involved in the anti-Castro plot was that the investigation would reveal that failure was due to a breakdown in communication between the CIA and the White House. In response to the internal publication of Lyman Kirkpatrick's Inspector General report, which Pfeiffer labeled a thinly veiled attempt to lay full blame for the failure on Deputy Director for Plans Richard Bissell, a former response titled "An Analysis of the Cuban Operation by the Deputy Director of Plans, Central Intelligence Agency." The analysis flat out denied the validity of the charges weighed against the agency by the IG report, instead claiming that the command and organizational relationship developed by the agency were correct and that the intelligence regarding Castro and internal opposition to him was as well. These two volumes were proposed to be published together, but the idea was nixed by John McCone, who wanted to present a single CIA position on the causes of failure.
Mm-hmm.
Kirkpatrick wrote that the report should remain classified as it revealed multiple quote-unquote operational matters, and while the full report was has never been released, sections have been published in other works as part of the CIA historical series, but these were not considered to have a wealth of information.
Why?
It's just sort of like people just sort of jockeying back and forth about who to blame, and just sort of like trying to make their own agencies look good while trying to throw the others like under the bus.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
The introduction of the report suggested that the actions or decisions taken by CIA officials should be judged in isolation and without reference to the agency's interrelations with other federal agencies in the White House, which Pfeiffer dismissed as absurd. And in the summary of evaluation section, the issue of fate having preordained the failure of the mission to overthrow Castro, stating, "In evaluating the agency's performance, it is essential to avoid grasping immediately, as many persons have done, at the explanation that the president's order canceling the D-Day airstrikes was the chief cause of failure."
And I always hear that the fact that there was no air cover is always the fact, there's always a reason that the Bay of Pigs failed. I mean, is that legit, or is that just the scapegoat?
I think that is incredibly like wrong, because even if they did do the airstrikes, it brings into question, this is part of the reason why Kennedy didn't want to acknowledge, like, have it go out, is that these planes are going to attack, they're going to run out of ammunition. They're going to run out of munitions. They're going to have to come back. It's like, well, where are they going to get the bombs from?
Right.
And it's like, yeah, the plausible deniability that they're coming from somewhere in South America, the Caribbean, and they're attacking Cuba, which was sort of like their fallback, that they're not coming from the United States. They're coming from elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that even then, if all the bombs hit and all their shots hit, like, it's not going to, like, dent, like, the Cuban army.
Right.
And even and again, then,
those planes have to go back somewhere. Where are they going back to?
Yeah. And even then, like, say they went on the beach, like, they secure the beach, they push back Cuban forces, the Air Force helps. It's like, well, they're going to have to fight the Cuban army in their home territory. And they're probably going to also have to fight, like, people are going to be conscripted into the army, because at that point, I don't think they had any kind of, like, conscription or anything like that. But they most definitely are going to have after that. And they're also probably going to have volunteers who are going to go to fight. Because if you're, like, Joe Blow, like, Cuban, like tenant farmer, like, you're not going to be happy to go back to the Batista regime. And it's like they said, too, like, the majority of the Cuban population is just sort of, like, ambivalent on the changes. And it's just because, like, conditions aren't great for them.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless.
Right.
And it's like, well, we don't, like, this guy's only been in power for like 5 years. You know, like, my children can read now, so that's better. Like, mm-hmm. My material position is, like, improving over time. So it's like, why don't I take a chance on him instead of the guys that are just like, well, you're going to get nothing and you're going to work for me on my plantation and you're going to like it. Mm-hmm. So, like, you're going to get people who are going to support, like, Castro once they get into, like, Cuba itself.
Right.
Like, I kind of believe that if Nixon had won the 1960 election, that instead of the Vietnam War, we probably would have had the Cuban War.
Yeah, but how long would have that lasted? Or would have that ended up turning into another world fucking war?
Well, I think, like, that if we had a quote-unquote, like, Cuban War, I think, like, by the time, like, if Nixon just initially, like, jumped in and invaded, I think it would have been, like, a Haiti or another, like, South American country. Like, I don't think
that we act like this, we won, but realistically we got our asses kicked by a bunch of dudes with fucking broken AKs.
Well, no, I think the U.S. probably would have, like, secured something at, like, great cost. But I don't think the Soviet Union would have gotten involved at that point, because the U.S. would have jumped in strong enough at an earlier point so that, like, they couldn't, like, plausibly, like, send, like, aid.
They really couldn't get over there in force without us just kind of being like, nah, no.
Because the difference between, like, Vietnam and Cuba is that, like, Vietnam is, like, on the other side of the world, and Cuba is literally in our backyard.
Right. Again, 90 miles off Key West.
Hmm. In this, though, Pfeiffer writes, the cruelest blow from the report was the agency's failure to give the program what it needed in order to accomplish its goals. And the report also spoke of no formal arrangement of management, with Bissell explaining, Helms would concern himself with all their operations activities, while Bissell focused most of his attention on the anti-Castro effort. Another criticism was the severe shortage of Spanish language capability among those who were assigned to the task force, which again is like the big problem. And it's like, well, it's like the thing in, like, Charlie Wilson's War that gets brought up and is like a legitimate point, is that, like, one of the guys that's in it, Gus Avracotos, who was a Greek, like, he's a Greek American,
mm-hmm.
and he was a CIA agent. And there was a period in, like, this.
No, that would be Polish, I think.
No, it's like, no, he's very
I'm
Greek.
Literally yeah. joking.
But he, the argument essentially is that by the 1980s, they started purging, like, all these sort of, like, working class, like, people from these, like, ethnic backgrounds. Because the CIA and the United States government has a thing where, like, you can't be too attached to any, like, foreign government. Hmm. And it's like, well, you don't have people who speak the language. And, like, Gustav Avracotos, like, he armed and advised the Hellenic Army, which was the the junta that ran Greece.
Right.
And, like, he was, like, the top guy there for a while. And it's like, well, if you have people who can actually, like, speak the language, like, the locals are going to trust them more than just some guy who comes in and is just trying to look in a phrase book to ask, like, how they order a daiquiri.
Me llamo Phil.
Yo soy importante.
Hola, me llamo Ryan. Lo siento, mi español es muy mal, pero I'll try.
And how even though the project employed 600 officials, director Alan Dulles even noted, never gave proper attention to the personnel situation. Mm. Another interesting note is how the CIA hoped that the invasion would, quote unquote, like a deus ex machina, produce a shock that would cause Cuban national defections. Mm. The CIA was successful in persuading a judge that Pfeiffer's criticism, which brought attention to his highly sensitive top secret report, would compromise national security. Using the Freedom of Information Act, Peter Kornbluh in the National Security Archive compelled the CIA to declassify the Inspector General's report in 1998. The National Security Archive is still dedicated to pursuing the full declassification of the last book of the official history of the Bay of Pigs operation through legal means. The Inspector General presented several conclusions. Quote-unquote, when the scale of the operation escalated from the training of guerrilla cadres to work with dissidents inside Cuba to an air-supported invasion, plausible deniability went out the window. The operator failed to recognize that the effort was both beyond the CIA's responsibility and its capability, and failed to back off.
Nah, bro, they knew what they were doing.
because of his concentration on the planned invasion, the agency failed to, quote-unquote, to appraise the chances of success realistically, to keep the national policymakers adequately and realistically informed of the conditions considered essential for success, and to press sufficiently for prompt policy decisions in a fast-moving situation. The agency's relationship with the Cubans in terms of what the Inspector General regarded as the agency's failure to take advantage of the quote-unquote active participation of the Cuban leadership and the failure to develop any strong resistances elements inside Cuba.
So basically just trying to go in there with no friends, just trying to do what you do on your own in a foreign country.
Yeah, and then the one Cubans that they did bring in, they didn't really consider them to be like senior partners in the like the whole thing.
Such dumb shit.
quote-unquote, a failure to quote-unquote, collect adequate information on the strengths of the Castro regime and the extent of the opposition to it, and it failed to evaluate the available information correctly, which again is going that they're planning on the idea that the second they get there, everyone's going to rise up. And it's like, we have no idea what the people there think.
Right.
Like, you're just going on the assumption that, like, the second they see, like, Coca-Cola, they're going to, like, immediately, like, run over to your side.
Yeah, again, a very America-centric view of things.
A failure to make full use of the information and resources which were available within the Intelligence Directorate of the CIA, and also use of such resources could have avoided the problem of the operations doing their own intelligence analysis. Overall, bad organization, poor quality of staffing, inadequate assets in both material and personnel, and a lack of clear plans and policies were seen throughout.
Central Intelligence Agency? That's an oxymoron.
Jack Pfeiffer's evaluation of evaluations found that the IG report made the assumption that a valid conclusion could be reached without reference to the CIA's relations with other agencies. While the DDP analysis said Diamond the Dallas plan...
Page? What?
Yes.
DDP had an analysis of this?
Yeah,
he had... Diamond Breaker off the top rope?
Well, you know, he called them, he said they had to go to the accountability crib, so...
He had all the soldiers, you know, that they were planning to have invade. He had them doing DDP yoga.
all right, now, bro, you're going to, no matter what happened to you over there, you're going to be so much more calm after yoga.
He had him practicing doing the diamond cutter on Fidel.
Yeah. What you're going to do is you're going to look at the Fidel doll I've made up in the other room, and you're going to run over there and just bang, bang, bang.
All right, so you're going to want to look at this point when you do it, and then you're going to go through the motions this way. You'll pull it off perfect every time. he went on to say that if reviewed without reference to the four memos that made up the Taylor report, the IG and DDP documents appear to be the results of a skunk pissing contest.
Okay.
As previously mentioned, there was the thought from sources close skunk to the investigation pissing. That the IG survey took the form that it did because Kirkpatrick wanted to inherit Bissell's job should it become vacant.
Yeah, when I woke up this morning, I could have sworn I had a strong feeling that somebody was going to use the word skunk pissing. Like when I first woke up, I was like, somebody's going to say that today.
And you know what? I actually can mark that off my bingo card now. Thank you.
When Steve popped up in a cold sweat at 7:37 this morning, and he said skunk pissing, and then his wife told him to go back to sleep, and he did promptly. Yeah.
Okay.
Skunk pissing. This was a view that Pfeiffer calls simplistic, but basically at the heart of the matter. In 1975, a Senate committee led by Senator Frank Church, investigating alleged abuses perpetrated by the United States intelligence community, issued the first in a total of 14 reports entitled Alleged Assassination Plots Involving Foreign Leaders.
A Church Frank is a hot dog you get after services.
And it's been blessed.
Before the baseball softball game. Or the church softball game.
Hot dog, a packet of Wise chips, and a barrel juice.
Plain Wise chips, not sour cream and onion, plain, not barbecue,
plain barrel juice too. Oh my god. Just a barrel, like a white liquid. What is this? It's just water.
It's water, bro. Enjoy.
It's a plain.
The pastor tells me it's too expensive, but we do have sugar packets over there.
And there's just like a crate of Domino sugar. Oh my god.
The church committee traced documented plots against Castro to have originated in 1962. The document cited the contact had by the CIA with American mafioso and contract killer John Roselli. Roselli, a firebrand, salivated to eliminate Castro to return Cuba back to the quote-unquote good old days. Another even more bizarre plot involved a Cuban revolutionary hero by the name of Rolando Cuboa, who I mentioned previously, who was codenamed Cumwash by the CIA.
Was his name Cumwash?
Cumwash.
What's that? Okay.
Kmlash in all capitals.
Oh.
The CIA.
Just say it more like Delco Valley. I would have heard it like Amlash.
The CIA sought his participation in the assassination operation. In the fall of 1963. Desmond Fitzgerald, a high-ranking official, once under the tutelage of Frank Wisner and a good friend of future CIA director William Colby, who had served in the CIA stations across the Far East during the 1950s, pursued Kubela's clandestine services. In their meetings, Fitzgerald duplicitously presented himself as U.S. Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy's personal representative.
Huh.
Some scholars saw this point of attack as a quote-unquote carrot-and-stick approach of Kennedy in dealing with Castro. Other historians, however, see these efforts by the CIA as the means to undermine President John F. Kennedy's peace initiative towards Castro. Some revisionist historians claim attempts to eliminate Castro represent a facet of a quote-unquote Kennedy obsession reportedly unshared by the rest of Washington. Which we know isn't true, because like,
he wasn't fucking upset. What is
everyone in DC was obsessed with, like,
yeah, what the fuck you? Oh my god, what?
We got to get back our summer home,
dude. The '60s was such a fucked up time in this country. I swear to God, the more I learn about like this, like I'm gonna say like post World War II through Vietnam was just the most fucked up time in this country, just wildly insane.
You know, Jagger just bought a timeshare. In Havana, and he needs access to it. So, this notion has since been easily dispelled for two reasons: one, that Castro was not the only target of political assassination on Kennedy's agenda, and two, CIA plots to kill Castro existed both, as mentioned before and after Kennedy's tenure as president.
So you can't even say it's on Kennedy's tenure, especially if the CIA was trying to fucking off this dude before Kennedy was even in office. So it's like,
yeah,
it's
like
a continuation of a mission.
Like the Bay of Pigs was planned during Eisenhower.
Yeah, you can't put this on old JFK shoulders for this. Like some of it, I'm sure, but the man at least publicly said that he don't want, or at least in documents that we have, said that he doesn't want a political assassination like that. It's unnecessary. So I mean,
which again goes to my argument that if Nixon, who was vice president, had won, it probably would have been like the Cuban War as opposed to the Vietnam War.
Yeah, but Nixon is also a fucking lunatic. It might have been both.
Right, guys, hold on a second. I gotta put my Tamagotchi to sleep here. I gotta turn the lights on.
Gotta put sweet Rengoku to bed.
Yeah, you gotta turn the lights off. I mean, you know, when they're sleeping, I didn't know that. And I got my wife one, and now she reminded me. I was like, oh, okay.
After his appearance on the final
fuck
episode,
up, dude. I don't want to think about it again.
Steve might start crying. The Cuban Project, as with the earlier Bay of Pigs invasion, is widely acknowledged as an American policy failure against Cuba, obviously. According to Noam Chomsky, it had a budget of $50 million per year and employed 2,500 people, including about 500 Americans, and remained secret for 14 years from 1961 to 1975.
You know he's still alive, by the way. Chomsky is—he's 95 years old. He's still alive.
Yeah, that was a little scary, I guess.
Yeah, because he went to the hospital, and let's be honest, like I'm not going to fault the journalists who like accidentally hit the button on the death announcement for Chomsky.
Like a submit button, real quick.
Chomsky.
When he goes to the hospital, at, like 95.
Yep.
And it was revealed in part by the Church Commission and the U.S. Senate, in part. Quote unquote, by good investigative journalism. He said that, quote unquote, it is possible that the operation is still ongoing, but it certainly lasted throughout the 1970s. And this is something he said in 1989. And I assure you that in today of 2024, there's probably some guy at the CIA whose job is to think of how to kill the current president of Cuba.
I was about to say, like, it's not Castro. It's not his kid or his brother or anything like that anymore, right?
No, it's Canal.
Canal?
Yeah.
Okay. Is Canal, is he like an American puppet, I'm sure?
Canal.
Or it has to at least be friendly towards the America, towards us.
No, he's not at all. Miguel Diaz-Canal is the current president. He's been,
Is he hostile towards us? Like, does he hate us?
I don't think he, no more than, like, any other, probably Cuban official. I think he's probably ambivalent. I think if he like came to the like if the United States like brought him to the table, he'd probably like be willing to like talk with them.
If the United States says, "Hey, listen, we're going to sponsor a trip for you to come hang out in Miami. We'll bring you to Publix. We'll introduce you to Los Pollos Tropical. We'll show you McDonald's. Wait, do they have McDonald's in Cuba?
They do not.
We'll introduce you to McDonald's and the hot and spicy. Oh yeah. Then my man will fall in love immediately.
He's gonna be like Messi in Publix.
He's gonna be like, oh, what's his name from fucking Brazil? What was his name? What was his fucking name in Brazil?
Lula?
No. Was it Brazil? He was like a Spanish president.
Royce Gracie.
And they have a bunch of pictures of him in like Publix up here. Like one, he was like really sick. He got COVID.
Jair Bolsonaro.
Yes, Bolsonaro. They had pictures of him in Publix getting pub subs, and I was like, "Yep, he's done. That's it. America's got his ass in the squeeze. He's getting pub subs. It's over."
But when Lionel Messi went to like Inter Miami, there's a picture of him in Publix buying groceries.
My dog got $7,000 worth of groceries. Look at that cart; it's so full.
Like before he settled in like Inter Miami when there were the rumors going on. Or I think it was while he was there, because the rumor is that once he's done playing, he's going to buy a team.
Yeah.
They're saying, like, once he gets a taste of Skyline Chili, he's going
to... fucking over.
This is muy bien, muy bien.
You know what the funniest... I think the funniest thing would be if Messi was, like, walking around in Miami Publix and nobody recognized him. I mean, it's less than 0% chance that would happen, but I think that somebody with that level of fame... walking around and nobody batting a second eye. Anywhere, honestly.
The further north you go in Florida, maybe there's less recognition ability, you know?
I was going to say,
well, son, you need to learn how to clean up after yourself. What do you
– What I'm saying is the more famous you are, not being recognized in a very public place always makes me, like, giddy and laugh. Right,
I would like, say, like,
just say Trump walked through Publix. Nobody recognized him. That would be the funniest fucking thing in the world to me.
If Lionel Messi walked through the Live Oak Publix and they're just like balling the whole time, and they're just like,
what's his name, Lionel Messi? He needs to clean up his trains.
I don't just some guy hiking up his belt. He's just like, well, I hope there, Pablo, you got enough money to cover all them groceries you're buying.
I find it fucking hilarious that you chose Live Oak Publix, because I've been there quite a few times. It's like, I don't know, maybe an hour from my house, but I worked rescue in that area, so we would constantly be in Live Oak, Florida, and those accents were perfect, boys.
Meanwhile, like, a white meth head's like cleaning up the shop, and they're like, I had the one, like, well-dressed Hispanic man who come in and is just casually buying groceries.
You can't trust them. Messi's like, I can buy you. Shut the fuck up.
The meth head, like, bumps into him and drops something. It's like, you dropped something there.
Messi forgets he's not, like, on the pitch, and he just, like, flops in the middle of Publix because somebody bumps into him. Somebody, like, bumps into his ankle with their cart, and he, like, throws himself on the ground.
Oh, no. Fucking referee shows up out of nowhere. Blows a whistle. Oh, man.
Somehow there's VAR in the Publix.
Holy shit. You get the manager coming down the stairs, like, blowing the whistle.
he's throwing up cards.
Oh, my God.
Well, on that note, boys, that concludes our coverage of Operation Mongoose.
Did they get him?
Eventually. Time got Castro eventually.
Yeah.
I told
Agent
you
time got the, Castro.
It was the long cigar. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And with that, good night.
Good night.
Bye. Bye.